shotglassdigital.com.
From magical movies.
All it takes is faith and trust. Oh, and something I forgot.
To unforgettable adventures.
Well, once there was a princess.
And an outlaw, that's what.
That's no life for a lovely lady always on the run.
From the thrill of the theater to the comfort of your home.
Do you want to build a snowman or ride our bike around the lawn?
I don't care how you kill the little beast, but do it! And do it now!
You can always count on something new from Disney.
That's why they call me Thumper.
The simple bare necessities.
Forget about your worries and your stuff.
Look, have I got it? The magic feather. Now you can fly.
Ohana means family.
Just a sec. Buzz, will you get up here and give me a hand? That's very funny.
I'm taking you to someplace pretty special.
Flower, clean and warm. Let the powder show.
You won't find him here. The king has returned.
Join us for discussion and commentary as we open the Disney Vault with your hosts, Steve Glosson and Teresa Delgado.
And hello again, everyone, and welcome to the most magical podcast on the entire internet. This is Disney Vault Talk. My name is Steve Glosson, and I'm happy to be along with you as we're back on track now, back doing what we do best, talking about the movies that we love, the movies from Walt Disney Studios. And after a couple of weeks of just tons and tons of news, and excited to be talking about the Disney animated feature Oliver and Company tonight. And to help do that and to really to kind of lead the discussion, because she is the heart and soul of Disney Vault Talk, it is the lovely, the talented, the powerful, Teresa Delgado. Hello, Teresa.
Hello, Steve. By the way, I've determined that your friend Kristen from Rock Out Loud.
That's right.
Probably doesn't like me.
Why is that?
Because I'm hashtag Beatles.
Oh, man. Well, see, that puts us in a whole different... man, that puts us in a whole different...
Hey, but remember, I don't like Twilight, so that redeems me, right?
That's totally. Totes. Totes redeems. Totes redeems. Listen, here's the thing. This is the Gulliver's. We don't dislike people because they like things that we don't like or don't like things that we do like. We just say, all right, well, let's not talk about that then. Unless we can have a good conversation. You know, unless we can have a normal conversation and not feel like I've got to convince you to not like them and you got to convince me to like. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I could have that conversation with you about the Beatles all day long.
Exactly. And I think that's what makes the Gulliverse special, is we don't turn things into a shouting match just because we all have varying opinions. And that's what the whole foundation of this whole thing was started on anyway, a safe place to geek out. And that's what that means.
I also discovered round three this week, as you well know. I've sent you lots of texts about round three.
Hold on. I want to read one of my favorite texts about round three from Teresa Delgado. She says, I don't understand who hosts round three. And so I said, well, there's me. There's Derek and Sheena, all humans. So I don't know how to better explain that. What scares me about you listening to round three, though, is that you have not commented on whether or not you think we're funny.
Okay, do you hear the cat fight happening behind me?
Okay, hear that? That's answer enough.
Okay, all right. Sorry. No. Okay, so here's the thing. I started listening to it, but I was really confused because I didn't understand when round three started, and I didn't understand who hosted round three, and I didn't understand the show. Mm-hmm. So now that I understand it, I'm going to go back and listen some more. But I can say that the episode I listened to the most of was from 2010 about Spider-Man, I didn't get to the other two things yet, but we all were talking about Spider-Man reboot, and I was really confused because I didn't realize the episode was from 2010. And I'm like, wait, this is out.
We really try to stay evergreen, you know. In other words, not have two topics that are too timely. So, and I think we've done really well in this back half of the episodes. For example, did you have an imaginary friend as a child?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Do you remember your imaginary friend's name?
They didn't have a name.
Okay.
None of them had names.
Oh.
They were just, I had several.
Okay. I mean, I had...
Not all at the same time. Okay. I had different ones.
Sure, sure. I had an imaginary friend that we talk about on the show, and it now has been brought up multiple times.
So. Was his name Bing Bong? Who's your friend that likes to play Bing Bong, Bing Bong?
No, his name was Jeffy, and he looked like...
Oh,
whole,
Jeffy.
And he looked
Jeffy.
Like...
Why Jeffy?
Oh, my gosh. All right. we've got some emails. Teresa, how does your connection look?
It says it's good, but I'm hearing from people, such as my mom, that it's not. So I got a text saying, you're cutting in and out.
Yeah, you're breaking up a little bit. It's weird.
Hang on. I'm gonna. Annoying. We're gonna have to come back. I'll be right back.
All right, you come back. We're going to refresh the call as we do, and this means edit. That's what that means for me, is that we edit it. I don't know if Teresa's going to reboot or what she's going to do. I will wait until I've heard from her on this matter. I have learned my lesson that when there is technical difficulties, please edit, Stephen. Don't make the podcast listening audience do what the live listening audience does and listen through the technical difficulties. So I apologize that you guys are listening through the technical difficulties. And we will now attempt to make this happen once again.
Okay, are we any better? Maybe?
So right now, I mean, you know, one sentence you can't really tell.
That's true.
I'm showing the connection between us is fast.
Okay, why don't you try this instead?
Sounds good to me. Anyhow, as I was about to say, because we were in an uncomfortable topic. How about let's do some emails, Teresa?
Sounds good to me.
When you mail a letter, you can send it anywhere. On foot, by truck, by aeroplane, the postman gets it there. So write a letter to a friend, maybe she'll write you. No matter what, you always know the mail must go through.
We need those letters.
From General Lee, dear son, we're waiting for the Huns at the pass. It would mean a lot if you'd come and back us up.
Oh, can you read this? There's no pictures.
Then I'll put that flea in a box, and then I'll put that box inside of another box, and then I'll mail that box to myself. And when it arrives, I'll smash it with a hammer.
Do you want me to start with Corbin here?
Sure.
Corbin, how we doing, buddy? Corbin says, hello, Disney Vault Talk. Whoa, it sounds like we got off on the wrong foot. Foot. Why can I not say the word foot tonight? It's like Teresa trying to say wolf. He says, it sounds like we got off on the wrong foot. It's not like I harpooned a singing whale or anything.
Too soon.
Yeah. Though I got pretty nervous when it sounded like you were going to have Make a Man Out of You be my number one Disney song ever, because no. I was probably a little hasty when I used the term hate listen. I obviously enjoy the podcast. I look forward to it every week and get pretty excited when I see there's a new one. It's just a matter of, well, if we ranked the 53 films, I think our list would be inverted. And that's fine. James Carville and Mary Madeline are still happily married. I don't know what that means.
Me either.
We can definitely... I think one's a really, really conservative and one's really liberal. We can differ heavily on our opinions and have a love-hate relationship. Is that still too harsh? We can call it the happiest love-hate relationship on earth. Regardless, know that I appreciate the work you put in this podcast and admire the passion that we share. I get to exercise and listen to two strangers talk about Disney movies. You are both blessed to get to talk about a subject you are passionate about for hours at a time and be heard by a wider audience. If it would just pay the bills, I would look into starting a competing one. Don't be competing with us, Corbin.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. Mm-mm. I'll win.
Nope. But if you guys enjoyed Dinosaur or Home on the Range, so help me, winky face, sincerely, Corbin. P.S. Teresa, you think Rattigan reminds you of the bad guy in Pocahontas because his name is Ratcliffe. Elementary, my dear Delgado.
And the only problem I have with this email is that is not the reason.
Oh, snap. Oh, Corbin.
Not the reason.
Corbin, you walked right into that one. Corbin, what is the reason?
There's similarities in their personality, the way they hold themselves, because you know how Rattigan is very, like, he's got a really broad chest.
Mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm.
So does Ratcliffe, and they walk that way. They're very pompous. And then the song that they sing is very similar in sound. So there's more than just the names, okay?
And suddenly Pepe's on the show, and there's more than just the names, okay?
You feel me?
You feel me?
I don't know what the Spanish is for you feel me.
Well, you know Pepe, the prawn.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying.
It's more than just the names, okay? My favorite, I have two favorite lines from Pepe. One is from Muppets from Space when the first little thing of the ship lands and it's just a small egg-looking thing like, that's it? And Pepe goes, shh, it could be full of chocolate, okay?
That's funny. I don't know why.
Because he's like, it's great. It's a great moment.
Because Pepe's so weird looking.
He is.
And so to hear him say, like, there could be chocolate in there, okay? It's like,
and then in Muppets from Space, Gonzo's getting all these messages, and Pepe and Rizzo think he's going crazy, and so they use, because Gonzo gets a message, cut the message in the lawn, do this, do that. So they go in while Gonzo's sleeping, and they say, if you build a hot tub, they will come. And Pepe's like, and they're in a fan, and so it's like, and they will come. So they build a hot tub, they start having a party, and Pepe's sitting there, and Rizzo's like, I'm feeling really bad, maybe we should tell him. And Pepe just snaps over to him, he's like, if you tell him, I will smack you. I will smack you like a bad, bad doggy, okay?
That's not as funny as the chocolate, but
I know.
It's not.
If you see it, it's funnier when you see it.
Yeah.
Anyhow, all right.
Anywho. So,
Bill.
Okay. Bill says, hey, Teresa. Hey, Steve. I just want to say, in regards to how to properly refer to the Don Bluth Immigrant Mouse Adventure. Let's just call it that from now on. The Immigrant Mouse Adventure. You are both correct. Steve, nope. You know as well as everyone, the title is An American Tale. However, speaking as a former video rental store, then Suncoast store manager. Teresa, you too are correct. If I had a dollar for every mom or dad that came into the store asking for the Fievel movie, I could have retired decades ago. Then, if I had another dollar for every time those same moms and dads replied, there's two of them? When I asked which one they wanted, I would probably let my wife retire as well. How nice of you.
Thanks, Bill. Wow. if they keep asking, you're going to retire, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, I love your show. I've been with it since the beginning, and although I sometimes disagree, that's what makes it so great. Thanks, Bill. Thank you, Bill.
And Bill, I just want to say, mass ignorance does not make it correct. Just because everyone says something doesn't mean it's right. If everyone suddenly started saying, well, the sky is, I don't know, what's a color that the sky ever is? Sure, it doesn't make it correct. If everyone started saying the grass is purple, that doesn't mean the grass is purple.
Maybe to a colorblind person it is.
No, I said if everyone says it.
Oh. Why does Chicken Little say the sky is falling? Well, not really why is that, but why the phrase the sky is falling?
Because he was not familiar with the concept of rain.
Well, okay. But why do people say that?
Because Chicken Little in that story, in the original story, panicked. And try to get everyone else to understand how dire the situation was when really there was nothing wrong. So when people start saying people are hollering the sky is falling, they just mean that they think people are blowing things out of proportion.
Mm-hmm.
Idiom talk with Teresa and Steve.
Okay. Roy.
Hello, Steve and Teresa. I'm usually binge listening to your shows, so I have a bunch of thoughts from many shows. Number one, like many others, I was surprised Baby Mine wasn't in your top tens. It's in mine, but you indicated how you made your choices based on personal experiences. I wonder if it would have made your top 10 if you had children. Oh, thanks, Roy, rubbing in my face that I'm single and alone. Any parent who has watched their child be bullied, then they have to come to them, comfort him or her, can relate to that sense of wanting to stitch an emotional blanket around your child and keep him or her warm there forever. Number two.
Can I have a comment about that?
Yes.
I don't necessarily have children myself, but I do have nephews, and I have nephews that have been bullied, and that still wouldn't make maybe Baby Mine be in my top 10. And also, I'm a teacher, and I take care of children, and I have a room that's open anytime for anybody who needs anything. And I had a student in my room today, third day of school, to eat lunch in my room because she was being teased and stuff out at lunch. So still wouldn't make my top 10, though.
Well, I mean, but, you know, and I look at it like this. It's not even an experience thing. It's a, what do I want out of a song?
Mm-hmm.
And that just didn't have it for me. It's not, and I'm not saying that anyone's wrong for having that in their top 10.
No, not at all. It's just not one of my
right
favorite songs.
It's all opinion. I mean, Corbin will come around to that eventually. Roy, though, I appreciate what you're saying and reminded me that I'm alone and childless and will be for the rest of my life. Number two, he says, The Rescuers is one of my favorite Disney movies of all time. I think because I remember going to see this movie as a child with my parents at a drive-in on a double bill with the Cat from Outer Space. As a fun fact, woohoo, the character of Mr. Snoops was based on Disney animation historian John Colhane. I know this because years later, a making of for The Black Cauldron hosted by Mr. Colhane was shown in an art class in school. During that special, he bragged about being the basis for Mr. Snoops. I only remember all this because it became a joke in class as to why anyone would brag about being Mr. Snoops. Also in 1977, my family faithfully watched the Bob Newhart show every week, and The Rescuers was one of the first time I understood that real people were the voices of cartoon characters. So it's an experiential thing for him with The Rescuers, and I get that. That's cool. So my
question, what they did to my pants.
My question is then, why are some characters ubiquitous in merchandising and others are practically forgotten? Even at the Disney parks, you can never find Rescuers or Black Cauldron or Brother Bear items. But there's no problem getting 101 Dalmatians or Lady and the Tramp stuff. There would have to be some market for completionists and even to re-energize an existing property. I don't know that there is a marketing... I don't know that there is a market for completionists.
No. I mean, maybe for certain things, but, you know, people want what is popular. Steve, you're a collector, so am I.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a line out of something, certain figures, mm-hmm. you know, yeah, we're completionists in that way because we want to get all of the line that's out there. But Disney doesn't really do lines of product like that other than with, like, Vinylmations and stuff like that. So, you know, there's not really a completionist thing. Now, if they did something like, I don't know, let's just say that they were doing all of the Disney animated movies, you know, and did some sort of like action figure deal, then there would be a completionist market because we're going to have to get the Black Cauldron one, you know?
Right.
But I don't think that there's a market for it, which is why they don't sell it. They are selling Frozen stuff like Mad, Marvel stuff, Star Wars stuff, and Princess stuff.
Yeah. I don't, you know, when you look back at some of these movies, they're not the ones that have stood the test of the times. 101 Dalmatians had a big resurgence back in the late 90s with the live action properties and just never really went away again. There's something about all the cute little puppies. When you talk about Brother Bear, you know, Brother Bear kind of came and went with no fanfare at all. Same thing with like the Atlantis movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are things that even though Atlantis, I think, had a follow-up series or a direct-to-DVD sequel or direct-to-video sequel, these are things that weren't big hits in the theater, so it doesn't make business sense to try to make collectibles out of them. But every now and again, you'll see them drop a little something here or there that, you know, just to kind of test the market and see how long these things will swing on some pegs or what have you.
Have you noticed, Steve, in stores that the Star Wars section is, like, gone?
Yeah, they're gearing up for Force Friday.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying it. So maybe it was sad.
Yeah.
For me.
Well, I got a text today from someone with a bunch of pictures of Star Wars stuff on clearance asking me if I needed anything.
Yeah, so. I almost did that for you the other day.
Well, anytime.
There wasn't anything good.
I hear you. Well, you know me, I'm a completionist. Finally, he says, Teresa, don't feel bad about crying at Disney World. I cried at Disney World when I met Pluto.
Oh, I don't feel bad about crying at Disney
World. No, Teresa doesn't feel bad about crying at all.
I don't feel bad about crying anytime I cry.
No, no.
It's just something that happens.
Yeah, it's just a Teresa response. That's from Roy in London, Ontario. Roy, great points all. I love your story about the rescuer, sir, by the way. And I think that when we get into Oliver and Company, by the way, I'll talk about my experience seeing this movie and why this is a special movie to me. And I do think a lot of our favorites are tied up in the initial experience we had of it, especially if it's tied to a good memory. Completely non-Disney, a lot of people hate Superman IV, The Quest for Peace. I actually enjoy that movie. It's a movie my dad and I went to see, and that was a rare thing because, you know, when you have four brothers and sisters, it was kind of rare to get one-on-one time with the old parents back in the day. And so for him to take me to see Superman because he knew I loved Superman and to sit through what was essentially not a great movie, you know, I still just have a real fondness for that movie in my heart to this day. And so, I do think that there is some experiential stuff involved in what we choose and what we like and what we don't. But at the same time, we do try to be fairly critical in a fair way, I should say, on the show here. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. So Matt Marks, and I'm so glad that I get to read this email. I'm just really glad it's my turn.
Okay.
Have you read this?
I've not read it. I just read the subject line.
The subject line? Mm-hmm. The subject line might be the best part. So Matt Marks writes us with a subject line of an email that says, the Disney movie involving temperatures less than 32 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm. Hey, Teresa and Steve. Well, it happened. I bought Frozen on Blu-ray. I had a Best Buy gift certificate, and I figured I could add a few Disney movies to our collection, so I picked up Sleeping Beauty and, yes, Frozen. And my wife and I watched it last night and enjoyed it. And then we watched Frozen Fever. Not only was it fun and funny, which is what I figured it would be, if you remember, but it had some nice character moments as well. And yes, I am looking forward to the sequel, and if I ever have a daughter, I will be sure to introduce her to the Frozen franchise. So there you go. May the mouse be with you, Matt Marks.
So
yay!
Does this bring to a close the Matthew Marks saga?
I think it does.
Okay.
I do. I think it does. I'm sort of sad, though. Because I always enjoyed getting the same kind of emails from him all the time.
The same story over and over and over again. I want to give one quick shout out from the emails, Teresa. Jamie Rotella had emailed in thanking us for using the magic dance from David Bowie at the end of The Black Cauldron. I did that because The Black Cauldron didn't really have any good songs or songs at all. And that would seem to be the most fitting. But she says Labyrinth is one of her all-time favorites. She wishes it was Disney, but sadly it's not, but it's amazing anyway. But it's a Disney cousin as it is a Jim Henson movie.
Yep. So. I would also like to give a shout-out to Jamie for being an awesome friend.
All right.
She and I have gotten to be friends and stuff, and she's awesome. So if you haven't talked to Jamie, you should, because she's amazing.
It's a shout-out. All right. That's our emails. You can email us at vaulttalk@gmail.com, vaulttalk@gmail.com, with your thoughts on different things. Our email bag stays consistently full, and we look forward to reading your emails and attempting to clear it out as much as possible. We've covered all the news, guys. D23 was packed full of news, and we're still in our minds dreaming about the day Star Wars Land comes to fruition and Toy Story Land and everything else that's going to be going on in those parks. And we're looking ahead to live action movies, the new Pirates of the Caribbean, Beauty and the Beast, Jungle Book, Even the Jungle Cruise movie starring The Rock. We're all looking forward to that. But
what?
You didn't know about that one?
No.
I'm sorry. They're doing a Jungle Cruise movie.
Are you serious?
Starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Mm-hmm. You're joking.
If I'm lying, I'm done.
I mean, I know he's in Moana.
Teresa, I will find you the link. And they say they want it to be, to have the feel of like, what was that Humphrey Bogart movie back in the day? Not Queen of the Nile. African Queen. HollywoodReporter.com, Teresa, Dwayne Johnson to star in Jungle Cruise movie for Disney.
Interesting.
John Requa and Glenn Ficarra, the duo behind the Will Smith heist movie Focus, have been tapped to write the script. He's teaming up with Disney to translate a theme park ride to the big screen. Johnson is attached to star in Jungle Cruise based on the classic ride. Let's see. Johnson's involvement once again puts the Jungle Boat back in the water for a multi-year dry dock phase. Disney's been trying to mount a movie based on the popular ride since at least 2004, during the years when the success of the Pirates of the Caribbean set sail many ride-based projects. Let me see. Here, this is what I was saying a while ago. The new take brings the project back to its period roots. It's going to be a period piece, and even the intent to hearken Cruise to movies such as The African Queen, the 1951 classic starring Humphrey Bogart and Katharine Hepburn, adventure movie that was one of the original inspirations for the ride. So there you go.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, interesting, interesting.
So there you go.
Well then.
Having said that, let's jump into this great little movie from 1988, Oliver and Company. Let me make sure I've got the right thing pulled up.
For 50 years, Walt Disney has turned great stories into unforgettable animated motion pictures. Now the tradition continues as Walt Disney Pictures proudly presents a new twist on the classic story of Oliver.
A pussycat? Come on, let's eat him.
I love a story with food in it.
Oliver, the little orphan who fell in with Fagin, the Dodger, and a gang of canine con artists out to take New York for all it's worth.
It's worthless.
What kind of work do we do anyway?
Investment banking, man.
Stop, thief!
Let's get out of here.
Oliver, the heroic kitten who was catapulted into a whole new world.
What is the meaning of this?
Oh, Georgette. I see you met Oliver.
The little furball.
Only to be rescued...
Oliver!
...by his gang of friends.
I just want to go back.
Back with his Uncle Tito.
Walt Disney Pictures presents our 27th full-length animated motion picture, featuring songs performed by Billy Joel, Huey Lewis, Ruth Pointer, and Bette Midler.
Hey, Frankie, get down!
Your family is cordially invited to meet our new family. Oliver, Jenny, Georgette, Tito, the Dodger, Fagin, Rita, and Sykes, the vicious villain determined to destroy Oliver. They're all together in a holiday entertainment event you'll never forget.
Absolutely, positively.
Walt Disney Pictures, Oliver and Company.
Well, like all Disney movies, you don't want to be an animal or an animal's parent, at least in the early part of this movie. This movie opens very heartbreakingly as we're introduced to Oliver, the orphan kitten, who almost drowns, is picked on, is almost killed by some wild dogs in an alley, and before you know it, enters into a life of crime with Billy Joel's dog. From there, Oliver finds himself in the lap of luxury. If this is torture, chain me to the wall, right until he's taken away again and found again. It's kind of like the Aristocats, kind of like the Rescuers, kind of like Lady and the Tramp, all bundled into one big ball of furry fun. This is Oliver and Company. And here's Teresa with some history.
I
sure you know everything there is to know about the castle.
Oh, well, actually, yes, I do. As you can see, the pseudo facade was stripped away to reveal a minimalist rococo design.
What do we got, Teresa?
Minimalist rococo design. I just like the way he says that.
And if it's not broke,
don't fix it. Okay, so Oliver and Company is the 27th animated film in the canon line. I really don't like the word canon.
It's not. It's not a. It's not an appropriate.
It's just not
terminology
I don't,
for what we're doing.
For some reason, I say it and I don't like it. So scratch that. It's number 27. It came out November 18th of 1988. Pretty awesome.
I remember it well.
I was born now.
I remember it well.
I just think it's funny because now I've actually been born, so all of this stuff is kind of current. So this means that I've seen it when it came out.
That's right.
And not on tape. Okay. Oliver and Company, when it was originally being developed, it was actually called Oliver and Dodger. And then the film's name was changed. And we'll get to that in fun facts and stuff. The film was re-released into theaters in 96, which I don't recall.
I don't remember that at all.
Me either. I don't remember that. And then that's the same year that it was actually released to video. And then it was also in theaters again in 2002, I think.
Really?
Oh, no. We're talking about video now.
Okay.
My bad. Reading this wrong. It was released on video in 96 and then again in 2002 and 2009 on DVD. And then the Blu-ray came out in 2013 for its 25th anniversary. And I actually have that.
Oh, wow.
So that's... I actually didn't watch... Did I watch Oliver and Company on Blu-ray? Or did I do it streaming? I don't recall. I don't remember. But I think... No, I didn't. I watched it on the Blu-ray. I'm trying to think. Because I watched it a couple weeks ago. So... on the Blu-ray, it looks really, really good. I don't know if you, how you saw it.
I rented it from iTunes because it was gone from Netflix by the time I got to watch it.
See, and that's why I couldn't remember if, how I watched it. Anyway, okay, so when The Black Cauldron came out in 1985, Michael Eisner and Jeffrey Katzenberg invited the animators to pitch potential ideas for upcoming features. And there were several that got pitched around then, including The Little Mermaid, Treasure Island in Space, and Oliver Twist, but with dogs, which is basically what we're seeing here. So that's the one that went over, and it went under that working title of Oliver and Dodger. Now, that was changed later on. Let me see here. I'm trying to find all the good stuff. So it okay, the film was $15 million to get made.
Oh, you're trying to find what now?
All the good stuff.
All the good stuff.
All the good stuff. All right, it, Disney invested $15 million into it. Specifically into a computer system that was for computer animation. So now we're really starting to see that. We saw it in The Black Cauldron, and we saw it in The Great Mouse Detective, but it wasn't as much as what we see in Oliver and Company. There was 11 minutes of computer-generated content in Oliver and Company. So that was the taxi cabs, the trains, Fagin's scooter cart, that kind of stuff.
And there are some shots where they pan around things that are definitely computer-generated. Where you can see the pan go turns a corner, and that's that computer generated situations there.
Yeah, so we're getting a lot more as we move forward. I'm actually really interested in the history of the Little Mermaid when we get there, because I want to know how much CG is in there, and I'm scared.
Why?
I don't know. CG in movies, like in animated movies, if it's used right and it's not obvious and in your face, I'm okay with it. But if it's going to be CG, then I want it to be like Pixar style, you know? So I'm scared because I've always thought that The Little Mermaid was, you know, ink and paint animation. And so I'm interested when we get there. Okay, but let's talk a little bit about the casting for this film because it's pretty stellar.
My Lanta.
The casting for this film is really, really good. So... when they were doing this, the filmmakers actually thought about, they wanted believable voices for where they were and how they were going to do all of these animals. So they wanted them to sound authentic. So they cast New York natives Bette Midler for Georgette, Cheryl Lee Ralph for Rita, and Roscoe Lee Brown for Francis. Now, they got Cheech Marin for Tito. I was going to call the, say, the Chihuahua.
That's saying it as it's spelled, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep, because they were going for diversity with this film, which, right. Let's give a round of applause for diversity. We get our first Mexican-American character.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely, listen,
Tito.
It is definitely Cheech Marin in Chihuahua form.
Oh my gosh. And you can totally tell. And even when the part when he dances, you know, where he kind of does that little, like, two steps forward, two steps, yep. That kind of salsa deal. So cute. All right, so let's see. Then they, for some reason, felt compelled that they had to have Billy Joel, but part of the deal was that he also got to do songs for the film. So he agreed to be Dodger, but as long as he got to do songs.
Well, because Billy Joel is New York.
Yeah. Speaking of Billy Joel, I don't know if you saw a tweet that I put out over the weekend about Billy Joel and me thinking about you.
Uh-oh.
I was at a totally 80s sing-along, and yes, there was a Billy Joel song.
I did see that.
And I was like, Steve Blossom.
All of them. I started looking through your tweets. I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Should have been there.
It was really good. You would have enjoyed it. Okay, so Billy Joel confirmed after the movie came out that he did the role because it was a Disney movie, and he admitted that I just had a little girl, so he just had a baby, and he wanted something that she could relate to. Mm-hmm. So he did Oliver and Company, which I think is really cute.
Yeah, I don't know why they use the term admitted as though it was some kind of secret that he had to keep, like some dark thing. It's, you know... Granted, in more recent days, you think of Eddie Murphy taking roles because his kids are around that didn't go so well for him. But I feel like this was great. I feel like this was a great role. The music's great in this movie. And, I mean, I don't know who else you'd get to play Dodger than Billy Joel at this point. I mean, it's a great role for him.
Mm-hmm. All right, so on opening weekend, it opened at the same weekend as a dinosaur film. What film was that, Steve?
It opened the same week as a dinosaur film?
Yep.
In November of 1988?
Yep.
I have no idea.
La, 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 la.
Land Before Time?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. Same weekend.
Land Before Time was that late in the 80s? I thought it was earlier in the 80s.
Yeah, it was. Land Before Time was my childhood.
Okay, I thought Land Before Time was a little bit earlier in the 80s than that.
Nope, nope, nope.
Yeah. I flied?
You falled. Okay, so The Land Before Time debuted at number one, and it grossed $7.5 million, and it beat Oliver and Company, which came in at fourth, grossing $4 million opening weekend. However, Oliver and Company outgrossed The Land Before Time with domestic gross estimates of around $53 million compared to $46 million.
That's interesting.
So, over the lifetime,
yeah. Well, but it's also gotten a re-release here.
True.
There.
And that's not fair.
But I also think that it might have outgrossed it eventually, but it hasn't had. And understand, I'm talking about a movie that I love. It hasn't had the staying power that Land Before Time had.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Land Before Time spawned, what, 20,000 sequels?
Oh my gosh, I love them all. I really like dinosaurs, Steve.
Yeah, I like dinosaurs as well.
I mean, I really like dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. Okay, so interesting. So we'll talk about the re-release really quick since you brought it up. When it re-released in theaters in 1996, it went directly against another Don Bluth film, All Dogs Go to Heaven 2. So, yeah. It grossed $4.5 million in its opening weekend for that re-release.
Now,
so about the same as when it originally released.
Just out of curiosity, do you feel like this was on purpose? Do you feel like Disney was like giving thumb in the old nose at Don Bluth?
Do movie makers know when other movies are coming out, so they set their release dates to be the same or not?
Yeah, yeah. It's the whole Captain America and Batman v Superman conundrum. They were slated to release on the same weekend, and Disney would not move Captain America, so Batman v Superman moved.
Mm.
And you have to imagine, I mean, and these things always get published in the trades and stuff even back then before the days of the internet. So, yeah. You have to imagine they knew.
Yeah, maybe they did. I'm going to pretend they didn't know and it was just a coinky dink.
Okay, all right.
Sorry. It probably wasn't. All right, so it had success at the box office,
mm-hmm.
which is good. We always love it when that happens.
You want to be successful.
Because there was a while where it was not.
Yeah, or you don't get to where we're going.
But it was mixed. It had mixed reviews from the critics. On Rotten Tomatoes, it actually reports at a 43%.
Which is surprising to me.
That surprises me because it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good movie. And it has freaking, what's his name in it? The guy who plays Fagin.
Dom DeLuise?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy people.
I don't know what they're thinking.
But that's only 35 reviews, so whatever. So the consensus of all these reviews states that Oliver and Company is decidedly a lesser effort film with lackluster songs, stiff animation, and a thoroughly predictable plot. I call bad words I can't say.
I'm going to give them 2 out of 3 on that.
Really?
Yeah. The animation at this point in 1988, the animation should, especially knowing what we were headed into, especially knowing where we were going and what's coming next, you feel like there's a leap. There is a tremendous leap in quality between the animation. Though it's better animation than what we've been getting, there's a tremendous leap in quality in just 2 years' time between Oliver and Company and The Little Mermaid. And as far as the predictability goes, yeah. I mean, the minute you introduce a little girl, you know someone's getting kidnapped.
I didn't.
Okay.
I mean, I did because I've seen it, but I didn't as a kid.
Not as a kid. No, I agree with you. Not as a kid. But as an adult watching this, I'm like, yeah, I can totally see where people would think this is predictable. You know, and then you know it's going to be the animals that save her, and then they'll all be friends in the end.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess. But songs?
No, the songs are good
stuff. Bull Monkey.
Yeah, the songs are good. That's what I'm saying. They get 2 out of 3, but that song, they can't, the songs are great. The songs work, and you never feel like you're stepping back into like Lady and the Tramp territory with the songs. It is very much a product of its time. In fact, that's one of the things that we will get there later, I know, but that's one of the things I dig about this is it is very much a product of 1988.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, as far as awards go, we haven't done this in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Original Song for Why Should I Worry?
Yes.
It was nominated for a Young Artist Award for Best Family Feature Film. And then it won a Golden Reel Award for Best Sound Editing. I don't know what a Golden Reel Award is.
I don't either.
But it won. Yay!
Hooray!
Yay for winning. Hooray! So, I think that's it for history.
Okay.
I think I already talked about when they were released on video and
you
stuff,
sure
right?
Did.
So then, yay!
That means it's time. Fun facts! Woo! Say it proud
and geek out loud. It's fun facts! Fun facts. Okay, so my first fun fact is how many cameo appearances of other dogs are in this movie.
Not just other dogs, my friend. I'm going to tell you, I spotted a human cameo in this.
I missed it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Lady, Tramp,
mm-hmm.
Pongo,
yes.
All of the dogs from the pound,
mm-hmm.
Jacques, what's his name? Have I told you about my Uncle Reliable before?
Trusty.
I remembered it after I said that.
Don't recommend I told you, but recommend? That's not
recommend. You know. new one. Hey, hey, Steve, do you reckon that time?
No, I don't reckon nothing.
I think that's everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think the yappy dog was there too.
The there's a scene where Oliver, after he jumps out of the rider truck, product placement, by the way.
Yeah, right.
After he jumps off the wheel of that, and there's a shot of him looking at the people going through the alley. Who's the human? Who's Pongo's human? What's his name?
Roger.
He walks by.
Interesting. Okay, so another cool thing, the song Why Should I Worry was actually used in a Disney TV series that starred Joey Lawrence, who was the voice of Oliver.
Okay.
I don't know the name of it.
Now, are you a Joey Lawrence fan?
Oh my God. Yes, please.
Okay.
Where was he? Was he originally on, was it Blossom?
Blossom is where he really broke big. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I love the Lawrence brothers. They're hilarious. I actually watched that one show that had Clarissa Explains It All in him because I was like, I love those shows.
I don't think that's her name.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Melissa Joan Hart, I believe.
There we go. Or Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Right? Didn't she do that one too?
I think so. Mm-hmm.
She was Sabrina and Clarissa.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the person that we have that participates in the chat and with the shows, was it Carissa?
Carissa.
Whenever you say Carissa, I sing the Clarissa Explains It All song.
Nice. Well played. Well played.
So animators actually shot photos of New York streets as reference to set up the cameras and stuff for how they were going to get a dog's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So the cameras, when they took the pictures, were 18 inches off the ground.
Oh, nice. Didn't they do something similar for like Lady and the Tramp?
I think so.
Yeah.
So that's probably not new news, but it's new today. So let's see. Dom DeLuise had already can't talk.
You got
today.
That? Calm no. down.
I don't.
Careful now. Be careful with that.
So here's the problem with me talking right now. I talked all day today.
Right.
To my students.
I'm with you.
So he already had roles in several other animated films at this point, but mostly it was Don Bluth films. He was in every single one, except for he was not in the one that was produced at the same time as this one, which would have been Land Before Time.
Land Before Time.
So when he got the chance to do a Disney film, he had to pick his role very carefully. And he loved the role in this film so much that he kept ad-libbing lines. And a lot of those lines were what was used in the film.
Nice.
So I like that. Yeah. I like that.
Dom DeLuise was a funny man. He was funny.
There's a Dom DeLuise joke in Sleepless in Seattle that I've never understood.
What is the joke?
I don't remember.
Okay, great.
But it's said by Meg Ryan's boyfriend, Bill Pullman?
Bill Pullman.
Yeah, and I don't remember what he said. Anyway, like many pre-1989 Disney films, okay, the video release of Oliver and Company was delayed for years. For years. Why is that?
He asked for a bottle of Dom DeLuise.
Oh, but why? I don't understand.
Instead of Don Perignon.
Oh.
Congratulations.
I've been watching that movie my whole life, and I never understood it until now.
Bless your heart.
I don't drink. I don't get it.
It's fine.
Okay. It's embarrassing. Okay. All right, so there are a bunch of logos and brand names in this movie.
Yes,
that
there
made
are.
Big time cameos. So Kodak, Dr. Scholl's, Sony, Diet Coke, Tab, McDonald's. I saw that one.
Coke.
Yeah, Yamaha, Ryder, and USA Today.
Mm-hmm. At the end, as they're pulling out, you've got the big Tab, Enjoy Tab, and then right there, you've got the big, right next to it, pretty much, you've got the Coca-Cola sign.
Well, those are competing sodas.
No, Tab, I think, was a brand of Coke.
What?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was its own brand.
No, I think Tab was a Coke product.
Oh.
And it phased out once they had Diet Coke.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I remember the first time I tried Diet Coke as a child, I'm like, this tastes like Tab.
Hmm.
And I never liked Tab. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so promotional tie-ins. I love promotional tie-ins. Because you know what that means? That means I get a Happy Meal toy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so Katzenberg wanted all marketing to kind of be focused on classic Dickens novel stuff and the pop score, which I think is weird. Like, why would you not want your stuff focused on the characters from the movie anyway? Okay, so they did promotional tie-ins at Sears. They produced and manufactured products with themes inspired from the film. McDonald's sold Christmas musical ornaments based on Oliver and Dodger.
I remember those.
And they also had small figurines based on the characters in the Happy Meal.
I remember those.
For its re-release in 96, they got a campaign at Burger King.
I don't remember that.
For the same similar figurine typey deals.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember either. So I must not have been getting too many Happy Meals at that point in time. Okay.
I was just watching a lot of TV, so I saw the commercials.
Oh. Patrick Stewart was actually considered for the role of Francis, and Whitney Houston was considered for the role of Rita.
Number one, that Patrick Stewart?
Like Patrick Stewart from Star Trek, Patrick Stewart.
Number one.
Okay.
It was here, number one, that Patrick Stewart.
Isn't that from Bond?
No, that's Patrick Stewart. He says, it was here, number one.
When does he say that?
He calls Riker number one.
Who's Riker?
His first officer.
I don't watch Star Trek.
Number one. Okay, I don't either. You mean Professor X, Patrick Stewart?
There we go, yes.
Logan, can I read your mind?
That's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. This is kind of cool because this is about the actual animators. Animator Mark Flood.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you like to have that last name? Flood. My last name is Flood. Said that this film and The Lion King are his favorite Disney movies.
Wow.
He's a furry people, too.
Well, I don't think he is a furry people. I think he's a fan of the furry people.
He's like me.
Yes.
All right. So, checking. Yeah, I'm done.
All right.
I thought I had one more, and I was trying to find it, but I can't find it. So never mind.
I saw this movie in the theater in 1988. I was 11 years old, and I got to go by myself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We'd moved a little over a year earlier to the little town that we lived in for the longest time, and I'm now stuck in. And there used to be a movie theater here, and it had one cinema, and it would play multiple showings of one movie a week. It would just rotate in the new movie, and it was always several weeks late getting the movie because, you know, they're only doing one a week, and sometimes it was a really popular movie, they'd hold it over for 2 weeks. I don't know how I ended up going to see Oliver and Company. I just wanted to go see a movie, and my parents, I guess, wanted me out of the house, and so like, yeah, go with your friends, and so we went and saw Oliver and Company. It was the third movie in my life that my parents let me go see with just me and my friends.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
And I loved the song. I loved Why Should I Worry? It was just a fun, good night having that night. And it was a movie that I remember, like I said, I was watching a lot of TV at the time. And I remember seeing all the TV spots for it and everything. And so I'm like, yeah, I got to go see this movie. I don't know why. I'm just going to go see it. It sounds like fun. Looks like fun. And it would be the last Disney movie I'd seen in a theater until Lion King.
Wait, what?
You read
Lion King?
That's right.
88, 93?
94, I believe.
What?
Yeah.
Is wrong with you?
It's a long story, but we'll talk about it as we go through our next couple of movies. But, you know, this movie, to me, Teresa, is interesting because it caps off an era and it almost ushers in a new one. You've still got that Xeroxy style of animation going on that you can see throughout this thing, but it's definitely, they definitely had peaked with it. They definitely had found their stride and had perfected that model. And of course, bringing in the computer animation with stuff and everything, it was, I really feel like they'd come as far as they could go with the way they'd been doing things, and it was time to get into a new era. But bringing in, like, the big-name stars... I'm sorry, Bette Midler is a huge name and was a huge name in 1988. Billy Joel, I mean, good night, gangbusters, to have him in there. Joey Lawrence hadn't quite hit his stride yet. You know, of course, he was still a boy. Cheech Marin is, you know, even at that point in history, was a classic, you know, classic comedian. And then, like we mentioned, Dom DeLuise already, but Robert Loggia just playing Sykes, just doing a few lines of Sykes. Robert Loggia is a statesman when it comes to theater, and not theater, but acting and movies and that sort of thing. And so this movie, to me, really has a special feel, in as much as Disney is now going for something special and different in a way they haven't in a while, it seems like, with this movie to me. And I may be off base in saying that. And that doesn't redeem any of the things that people can say critically about it. But I definitely see where, and I think the argument can be made that this is the beginning of that renaissance. It, you know, it's not the renaissance, but it's definitely the seeds are planted there, and what's getting ready to happen, I don't think would have necessarily happened without Oliver and Company, because it was, I remember it being well received, and I remember, you know, friends talking about it a little bit here and there, and it being a fun movie and laughing at all the right jokes, and it just playing just right. And even watching it back today, you know, as an adult watching it, you know, sitting in my living room watching it, of course I see some of the weaknesses, but everything plays the way it needs to play. In some ways it was kind of safe, you know, it was definitely not the it definitely was not the return to the fairy tales, you know, of yesteryear, the way that Little Mermaid would be, but it was still a good, fun movie. And it was unique to me because, as you said at the outset, you were alive for this one. This movie's unique to me because I recognize the time period that we're in more than I ever did with, like, 101 Dalmatians or Lady and the Tramp or even the Aristocats. I recognized what era this thing takes place in, if that makes sense at all.
It does. It makes a lot of sense. I think it's cool that this was your, like, first big movie as an 11-year-old.
Well, now understand, the other two movies I'd been to see by myself with just friends were Ernest Goes to Camp and Spaceballs.
That's funny. I don't like the Ernest movies, really.
I'm out. You can finish.
No, I've seen them.
You can just finish the show by yourself. You crossed the line, Delgado. You crossed the line.
He's weird looking. He's really weird looking.
He's Slinky Dog.
He's Slinky? What?
Yeah.
What?
The voice of Slinky in the first Toy Story, definitely, maybe the second one, Jim Varney.
You are kidding me.
Is Ernest, yeah.
That's crazy.
Did you not know that?
I did not. I didn't know that it was the same person. Because whatever. Now that I've completely, like, I don't know, embarrassed myself, I guess. So I was 3.
Nice.
When this movie came out. 3 years old, right?
Yep.
Yes, I was 3. I don't remember seeing this. When it came out, and I know I've obviously seen it, but I don't remember it specifically. So when I reached about that age, I think it was, my mom started taking us every Disney film that came out on opening day. We went to see, we missed wow. school, and we went to, like, the very first showing, and we went to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I had to text her and ask her if we went to this, and she said yes. So apparently I did see it when it came out, but I don't remember it really until later.
Sure.
And I remember always liking it because of the music, because of Dodger, specifically Dodger. And at the time, I wasn't a big cat person, but I always thought Oliver was cute. But there are moments with his animation when his face looks weird,
mm-hmm.
where I'm like, ee. I remembered despising Georgette. Did not like her. Thought she was rude and mean. And she threw his bowl in the trash, and that greatly upset me. And, you know, so when I rewatched this, those same feelings came back. So it's like I know what parts of it I really like and which parts I didn't like because the same feelings came, you know, and I could – it's just one of those things when you have a connection to something, even if you don't remember it, you remember the feelings that you had.
Right, right.
You know, and so it's kind of like, what is that feeling? But Steve, I have somebody who might remember my experience if mm-hmm. you want to know
okay.
what it was.
All right.
So let's see if this works.
You got to be kidding me. Not a Disney Vault Talk first.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show.
Disney Vault Talk first.
Oh, my Lanta. Turn your radio. You got to turn your radio down.
Welcome. Mute Mixler.
Yeah, mute Mixler. Hit the little thing.
You gotta turn your radio down.
Wait.
Hit the little thing.
On the volume, there's an X you can hit.
We're in a loop. We're caught in a loop, Teresa.
I don't know how to get it. Just close Mixler. Close the tab. I don't know how to get it. Just close Mixler. Close the tab. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, the mother of the lovely, the talented, and the powerful, Teresa Delgado. This is Miss Lori. Hello, Miss Lori.
Hi, guys. How are y'all?
We're doing great. Can you get up in, can you get up on your mic a little closer to your laptop
get up
or whatever
your
you're using?
Computer.
Yeah.
How close do I have to get to this? Okay. Is that better?
Not really. But we'll make it work in post.
Who? Well, see, now you know where Teresa gets all these little phrases. Like, how's it going? How it's going?
How it's going? How it's going, Miss Lori?
How it's going?
It's going pretty well.
So, Steve, I figured this might be a good time
mm-hmm.
to start bringing my mom in for a little short segment I'm going to call What Teresa's First Movie Experience Was Like. Because for some of these, I don't remember. I was three. So, Mom, since you remember this, I don't. What was it like?
Well, you have to remember that this was a period of time where you had already become to be a very socially, no, that's not it, culturally aware person. And this is when you were had already told the people in pre-K that you couldn't eat grapes.
Oh.
So this movie, during some of those scary, weird parts, like when you thought Georgette was rude, you were really incensed by how rude she was because it wasn't very nice. You know, kind of like how upset you were that people tried to have you eat grapes when you couldn't eat grapes because the people who grew grapes were not nice to the people that picked the grapes. So it was sort of along those kind of lines.
Oh my goodness.
Very socially aware at three years old.
Man, I had no idea, Teresa.
Was this the same time when the march down Congress Avenue happened and I said that other thing?
No, you were a little older when that happened.
Okay. Well, Steve, just to fill you in, we'll tell you that story. So Mom tells it better. It was a march down Congress Avenue for Planned Parenthood, actually. And we're standing on the steps behind the speaker of the Capitol of the state capitol here in Austin. And I apparently said something that I don't recall saying. And Mom knows it word for word. What did I say?
You said they're trying to take my choices away.
And how old was I?
Oh my god.
You were about 5 or 6.
So, Steve.
No, you know what? You were younger than that. You might have been 3 or 4 when this happened, now that I'm thinking back on it.
Okay.
So this could be about the same time.
So I was already having problems with social issues.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't like rude dogs, grapes, or people taking your choices away?
Well, no, she didn't like grapes. She didn't eat grapes because she was boycotting grapes. Because I was boycotting grapes.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. See, that's, and parents, there's a lesson for parents. That's the influence you have over your children, whether you realize it or not.
We still don't eat grapes unless someone else buys them.
Well, she doesn't. I do. Was there any particular character, anything that I liked? Because I know the movie coming up next, you have very vivid memories of me with that one. And so we'll have to have you back, you know, for a little short segment for that one. But was there any specific character or anything I liked from this one?
You really liked Oliver, even though you weren't a cat person. But you liked him because he was cute.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so, that's where the cute furry thing started coming around.
Oh. Well, now, Teresa, but you weren't a cat person then, but you are now, Teresa.
I am.
Makes me
sad.
I'm
a cat person now. Yeah, it took me a long time to be a cat person, Steve. Like, a really long time. It didn't happen until about 2008.
Mm. Well.
I think.
Nobody's perfect.
2008.
Yeah. Because that's when I started working in Marble Falls.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, Mom, we'll have to have you back on specifically for the next movie.
That's fine. If you just have to teach me how to turn these darn things on and off.
I will.
Yes, please.
I will also show you how to use your iPhone microphone.
Well, I was trying to figure that out. I was trying to decide, do I use my iPhone or do I use my MacBook? And I couldn't figure it out. So I just went the easy way, which was my laptop.
Well, you sound great all of a sudden. So that's wonderful. And
well, that's because I scooted closer to my computer.
Well, and it worked out wonderfully. So thank you so much for stopping in. It's great to talk to you.
Nice talking to you. Talk to you again soon, or see you maybe in December.
We're still working out all the details.
I'm working out the details too, because you know I have a 2-story house, Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
We know how you love stairs,
Stephen. I don't like stairs. Nope. I'll give out.
There's
on the
less stairs at my mom's house than there is coming up to my apartment.
Well, that's good. That's
good. I got big plans.
All right. Well, we'll pray about it.
I'm gonna get off of here and listen to the show.
Okay. Thanks, Miss Lori.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
And ladies and gentlemen, what just happened was a surprise that Teresa sprung on me.
You're welcome. Well, I figure with the movies that we're doing right now, mm-hmm. there's going to be stuff that I remember and stuff that I don't because I was so little.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be good to have her on for those. Once we get a little bit, you know, when I was a little bit older, like your age,
right.
When you saw Oliver and Company.
Oh, okay. I'm with you now.
When you saw Oliver and Company.
Sure.
I remember those very vividly. Steve, but this one I don't remember.
Steve, once I'm your age, I'll remember the movies I go see, okay?
Okay.
When I'm an old man like you, Steven.
Steven.
I thought I was in trouble for a minute there.
Called you Steven. But see, like, I remember my experience with The Little Mermaid only because my mom has told me so many times.
Right.
You know, one of those things.
Sure.
But, okay, so let's talk about characters really quick. Who's your favorite? New question. Who was your favorite when you saw it then, and who is your favorite now?
Probably when I saw it then, my favorite would have been the Tito, because he had the jokes that landed the best in the whole thing as a kid, you know, because I got the jokes they were going for, like, you know, just in the funny line, the line that was in the trailer, it was all over the trailer, was, "If this is torture, chain me to the wall." And so in the stuff with him and Georgette, you know, it was just, it landed real well to me as a kid. Older now, as I was watching it, you know, today, I love the stuff that Francis does. He really trips me out. Francis trips me out. But I do love Dodger as well. I like Dodger's attitude, and you know, obviously he's the cool guy, so you gotta like him. But Francis is funny to me. Francis and Einstein both are really funny characters to me.
So apparently, as a kid, I liked Oliver.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I remember liking Dodger more, but any of that's not true. I vote Mom's right. So I liked Oliver. Now I actually love Tito. Oh my gosh. When I was rewatching it, everything that Tito said just cracked me up. And I think it could be because I was so young when I saw it the first time that the Tito jokes didn't land on me, you know?
Right.
Because I was too young for him, so I didn't get it. But now I get it. And now I'm even more socially aware than I apparently was when I was three. So,
are you?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, all right.
So they're even more funny. And especially with everything that's been happening in our current world with, you know, Mexican immigration and all of that kind of stuff, even more hilarious. So funny. Kind of a little bit on point sort of stereotyping, but funny.
Well, you know what? I would agree with you if it weren't that it was Cheech Marin.
True.
And if you watch any of the Cheech and Chong stuff, you see that, you know, this is this guy. He's doing Cheech Marin in Chihuahua animation form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, aside from just having, you know, the rolled up joint of marijuana with him, of the marijuana. You know, he's all there. Like when he just collapses on the in the house, he grabs the first thing he does, grab a cigar and lay there, you know. And so
I like it when he reminds me of, and I was actually going to say something that he didn't do and it dawned on me, different person.
Mm-hmm.
He reminds me of the Chihuahua in Lady and the Tramp. It's pretty close. Pretty close.
I don't like the term Chihuahua.
The Chihuahua.
All right, thank you. Did you ever have a Chihuahua?
Did I ever have a Chihuahua?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. No, those things. I had one experience with a Chihuahua, and this is why I call it that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't like them. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to call them a Chihuahua.
Gotcha.
But one experience I had was in college. A friend of mine had one, and I was in the car with her and some other people, and the thing freaking bit me.
Mm.
Why?
I
didn't touch it. I didn't aggravate it. I didn't even, like, approach it.
Yeah.
But for some reason, ram.
They really attach to, like, their owner and get very protective, even though they can't really do much to protect. My dad saw the old Taco Bell commercials with the talking Chihuahua and decided that that's what he wanted. He wanted a Chihuahua. So my siblings and I, one Christmas, bought him a little Chihuahua puppy. The little thing was the run of his litter. He was tiny. My dad would put him in his shirt pocket and walk around with him. No, nuh-uh. In fact, this thing. He was the run of the litter. He was the smallest one of the bunch. So ironically, we named him Samson. And he grew into his name.
Really?
Yeah. Like he ended up being like, he was a good looking little Chihuahua. He was really good and filled out. He wasn't like fat or too small and ugly. He was just really a good looking little Chihuahua and, pretty well behaved, but he loved my sister. And so I would torment him, he'd be sitting next to my sister and I would just go over and start kind of touching her, you know, just kind of touching her shoulder, pushing her over, and man, he'd go after me. And one time he'd snip my little hand and then he realized, oh crap, I've messed up. And like, he immediately backed down and tucked his tail.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like, whatever, buddy, you're fine. So my dad then, thinking he wanted to breed Chihuahuas, went out and bought a little girl named Delilah, and he named her Delilah. So they had Samson and Delilah.
Aw, cute.
And Delilah taught me to hate Chihuahuas.
What happened?
Well, she had puppies and became just this overprotective, you know, helicopter mom. And from there, like, they weren't barky chihuahuas at all until she had babies and would start barking at people who came in. And then she taught Samson how to bark. And so then they became these barky. And I can't stand barky dogs. I can't stand barky dogs or licky dogs. That's why I don't have pets.
I like licky dogs.
Mm-mm, don't lick me. Ain't no sense in all that. All that licking. That's ridiculous.
Once upon a time in New York City.
That's a great opening song, by the way.
Well, do you want to get into songs?
Let's do it. Because, you know, the first thing you notice about this movie is the opening song is fantastic. It just has a great feel to it. And, you know, it's definitely, you know, almost like Oliver's little theme as everything's going on around him.
Oh, I'm so sad. He's in a wet box.
Classic
He's
Disney.
He's in a wet box and gets all soggy and saggy. And he falls out of it like he's flying down the river. And he almost goes into the drain. Like, I cried. I'm not going to lie.
Well, and it makes you wonder, what adult is, or what human is just leaving this box out there once there's only one cat in it and letting it just sit there?
Yeah, who does that?
Someone in New York, I guess. Freaking New Yorkers.
Once upon a time in New York City, it's a big old battle, tough old town, it's true. But beginnings are contagious there. They're always setting stages there. They're always turning pages there for you. Ain't it great the way it all begins? In New York City, right away you're making time and making friends. No one cares where you were yesterday. If they pick you out, you're on your way to a once upon a time that never ends. So Oliver, don't be shy. Get out there and go and try.
I mean, and let's not forget, those are his brothers and sisters in that box with him.
Yeah.
You know, I want to read, I was playing this off of YouTube, I want to read some of the comments, if I may, under this song. Disney Chrissy B says, always on my top Disney movies, my mom says these movies are only remembered by true Disney fans only.
It's a good statement.
TES and Other Crafts says, Tangled and Frozen were great Disney movies, but they just can't compare to the classics like this.
Wow. Wow. I mean, I like Oliver and Company, okay?
Envy says, could never watch the beginning of this without crying for that kitten. It would hurt me so much because I know people are really like this in real life. Would ignore a sad kitten and just keep on walking.
For real, for real. Preach.
Mm. Step Honey says, I always tear up during this song.
So you know what's weird really quick?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a conversation like Skype bubble thing.
Yeah.
To mute when my cats meow.
Just scroll over your my picture there and it should come up.
Nope.
That's fine.
I don't have one.
It's fine.
Okay, so I apologize in advance for if any inadvertent cat meows.
Yeah, well, we'll just get bad reviews.
Yeah, so, you know. Do we get bad reviews about cats?
All the time.
Do we really?
Yeah, people hate cats, Teresa.
We get bad reviews for cats?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
It is it's a nice little slow. Is that Huey Lewis singing that one, or is that?
Yes, it's Huey Lewis.
Okay. It's always once upon a time in New York City. That's the power of love. Wow. That's what I know him from more than anything. Is his work with the Back to the Future.
So let's do Perfect Isn't Easy.
Ooh, Perfect Isn't Easy.
This is the Bette Midler
song. Yes, ma'am.
And I want to play it just because it's Bette Midler.
Of course.
You know what I love Bette Midler in?
Rise and Shine,
she's
Georgette.
In it.
Public awaits.
I'll figure it out after this.
Beaches?
No.
That witch movie?
That's good. No.
Girl, we've got work to do. Pass me the paint and glue. Perfect isn't easy, but it's me. When one knows the world is watching, one does what one must. Some minor adjustments, darling, not for my vanity, but for humanity. Each little step opposed. See how the breeding shows. Ugh. Sometimes it's too much for even me. But when all the world says yes, then who am I to say no? Don't ask a mutt to strut like a showgirl. No, girl, you need a bro.
Now, who are all the dogs in the pictures that's sitting around her little doggy bed pillow?
See, that's the thing. She's a...
hussy?
Yeah.
George,
I was going to say another word.
Right.
It starts with an H.
Well, family friendly.
It's also a gardening tool.
Oh, okay. Family friendly.
Yeah, I don't know. And that concerned me when I watched it for the second time. I was like, that's not good.
Well, there's the whole going behind the changing curtain thing. And it's like, what are we doing right now?
Yeah.
What is actually happening?
And then I thought she shouldn't be allowed to have puppies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, you're a poodle, and I don't like your fluffy hair.
I was disturbed at how sharp they drew her teeth.
Yeah, it's like she's a vampire dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm like, that's a little too much attention to detail.
So the movie that I love Bette Midler in is actually First Wives Club.
Okay.
Great, great, great movie.
Is that Danny DeVito with her in that?
I don't remember.
I don't know. Never saw it.
I don't remember.
I had you pegged for a Beaches fan.
I've never seen Beaches.
Really? That's where Wind Beneath My Wings really comes in big time.
No, never seen it. Yeah. But I do like her in Hocus Pocus quite a bit.
Okay.
So let's see. What other good songs? I mean, they're all good. Yeah. Streets of Gold is okay.
Come on. This is like a breaking it down. This is pure 80s gold.
Yeah, seriously.
But if you're tough and always use your head, you'll feel right at home on the street. When you got talent, everything is free. Watch how we do things. Ooh, I guarantee you're gonna see how the best survive. He makes an art out of staying alive. If you do just as you're told, these are streets of gold. Every boulevard is
a... I mean, this is literally music directly from this time period. I mean, like I said, this is definitely a product of its time, for sure.
This could be played at a totally 80s sing-along.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. I mean, it's got the... It goes in the whole sax thing. It's got that reverb on the drums. It's just, you know... It's all of it. It's all of it.
But let's get down to the real song.
You want to get right into the why should I worry, huh?
Oh yeah.
All right.
Oh yeah.
Well, here we go. I mean, this
you're
is...
not wagging your tail right now. I don't know what's wrong with you.
This is the song from this movie, no doubt about it. It's the one that I was singing afterwards. You know, I wasn't saying all the words right, but I was sure enough singing it.
So with this song, my dance sort of starts with a little bit of like a shoulder thing.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
With a little bit of like a head bob.
Right.
And then you get into the chorus and then it's like all out, like hands in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, something I realized as this thing was starting up and he does the woo, like he's howling kind of. I love Georgette's bark. Because she just goes, bark, bark.
She does.
They're
so dumb.
They're great little like humorous. So they're great little humorous things like that in this movie that works so well.
See, here's the thing I don't get. All right, so we can hear the dogs talking. Obviously, mm-hmm. They're talking, and if humans heard them, they were going rawr, 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 you know.
Right.
So is she saying bark, but actually the humans hear bark?
Yes, they hear. They hear rawr, 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 you know. They hear the noise.
Well, then why does she have... Why can't she just make the noise?
Because it's not funny. Bark. It's not funny if she bark. Just... If they all of a sudden put a real dog sound in there, but when she's going, bark, bark! I just love it. I thought it was hilarious. It was very subtle, very funny, and I really dug it. I love the little rats around the little can of fire during this particular little song. It's just a quick little shot. And everyone's into it with him. But
I like when he gets on top of the cab.
Yeah, well, that's iconic. I mean, if there's anything iconic to come out of this film, it's that shot. That is right out of the trailers. You know, this song was heavily used in the trailers and everything. So it's definitely right out of there. I like the reprise of the song at the end when they're all singing along. And Francis is completely off kilter with the rest of them. He's like, why should I worry?
Oh my gosh.
So,
is there a Why Should I Worry music video with Billy Joel that's not the movie, but just like...
I don't know. I don't think
so. Because I thought it would be cool if there was one... That was like him singing it, you know, and like with clips of the dogs or something. But maybe not.
Why Should I Worry music video? I don't see it, no.
Well, would have been a neat
Wait
idea.
A second. Retro music video. Let me see. Let me read the description here. So this time I'll be the one in front of the camera instead of behind as I convince a new resident of the street there ain't nothing to worry about in the big city. This was mainly for my brother's music. Oh, no. This is some fan-made thing. Stupid. let me see if I can get... I saw where live popped up. This is great podcasting.
Ooh. Why should I worry live? He did it live. How cool would that be?
I'm seeing Billy Joel covers. I'm just seeing a bunch of covers.
Yeah, never mind.
Yeah. Now, Billy Joel does play, like, you know, he only plays the Garden right now, Madison Square Garden. I think he does, like, a show a month at the Madison Square Garden, and it sells out every time, and that's the only thing he's doing.
Do you have a favorite Billy Joel song?
Why should I worry?
Really?
I mean, I'm not a super huge Billy Joel fan. I know that's kind of sacrilege. I don't disrespect the man, and I don't dislike his work, but I'm just not. He's never been like one of my, oh my gosh, I gotta listen to Billy Joel, you know, kind of thing.
I love Billy Joel.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What is your favorite Billy Joel song? So glad you asked, Steve.
Probably, well, I love We Didn't Start the Fire.
Of course, who doesn't love We Didn't Start the Fire?
I love We Didn't Start the Fire. I like the piano one.
Mm-hmm. The Piano Man?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I like Uptown Girl. Uptown Girl is the one that came on at the 80s single.
Okay, yeah.
I like Uptown Girl.
Only the Good Die Young?
That's a good song.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the name of this one.
How does it go?
I think it's, hang on, I'm looking at a bunch of his songs trying to remember. Maybe it might be This Is the Time. Yeah, that's it.
I like It's Still Rock and Roll to Me.
Ooh, that's a good one.
You may be right. I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for.
That's cool, though, that he plays at the Garden.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I won't see him because I don't go there.
No. That's what a lot of people who are big Billy Joel fans feel like.
Yeah.
But you know what? He's earned it.
You know what? I'm trying to decide if I should go see Elton John.
Where is he going to be?
At the Circuit of the Americas, the racetrack here in Austin after the big race here.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing. Kind of want to go.
All right. Well, you go for it.
Well, okay. So I think that's
final thoughts about Oliver and Company, Teresa.
I enjoy the movie, and it is a rewatchable movie for me.
Agreed.
It doesn't rank up there with my all-time favorite furry people movies. Mm-hmm. You know, like I love 101 Dalmatians and Lady and the Tramp probably more if I'm picking a dog movie. But it's a really, really good, fun story, and I absolutely love Fagin. We really didn't talk about him much, but
he is funny.
He's a great character, and he's so sweet and nice, and he goes way out of his way to save her. whose name I don't remember. I was going to call her Penny, but she looks like Penny.
She does look like Penny,
she
but her name
almost
is
almost exactly like
her name
Penny.
Is Jenny.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jenny and Penny.
And in the end, Jenny is dressed like Annie. Did you catch that, perchance?
No.
The last shot, after everything's okay and she's hanging out and it's her birthday and everything, she is dressed like Little Orphan Annie.
Wow.
No lie. I wouldn't make this stuff up. I can't.
But, yeah, I really like it. It's definitely worth having on Blu-ray for me.
Wow. See, I didn't realize it was out on Blu-ray, because this one I would have on Blu-ray. Not that I would watch all the time, but I really do enjoy this movie. I enjoyed it today watching it back, and you know, maybe it is some of that experiential stuff we talked about earlier on the show with some of the emails, and because again, 43% on Rotten Tomatoes, it seems low to me, but I can see where people think the plot's a little predictable, but the music alone and some of the jokes land just right. So I love this movie, and I'm glad we got to talk about it, and our apologies to old Katrina.
Yeah, I really wanted to have her, and it's been such a crazy week with school starting and stuff that I knew we needed to do the episode, and I just didn't have time to get in touch with her. So, Katrina, if you hear us on here, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's Teresa's fault, Katrina.
It totally
me.
Is.
Not me. I depend on her for a lot, and I should not. But so maybe it is my fault. Who knows? But here's the point. Our next episode. Now, our next episode, we're going to kind of take a break and look back at where we've come from. Because
exactly.
This is the line of demarcation in Disney animated films. So we're gonna do a quick retrospective on our next episode, and then we hit number 28.
The Little Mermaid.
Little Mermaid. If she were
Little
a rapper,
Mermaid.
If she was a rapper, it'd be Little Mermaid.
Little Mermaid.
So, until then, Teresa, tell people how they can get in touch with us.
Well, you can send us an email, and please send it to vaulttalk@gmail.com. Today, during the chat while the show was going on, I was noticing that some people have sent emails, and we haven't read their emails, but I think it's because they've sent them to Goal.
Yeah, I do get some, and I should forward them, but a lot of times I read my emails from my iPhone, and then I go back through and star them when I'm getting ready. It's a lot easier if you'll just shoot it to vaulttalk@gmail.com.
Yeah, send them over there because then we can see, we flag them and we know which ones we've read and which ones we haven't read and stuff. So send them to vaulttalk@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook. We're Disney Vault Talk. Just search bar Disney Vault Talk. And then on Twitter, we're at Disney Vault Talk. So follow us.
And, of course, head over to geekoutpodcast.com. You'll find all the RSS feeds for all the different Goaliverse shows. You'll find the iTunes links there as well. You'll also find the Amazon links you can click on and support the shows. And if you want to support us directly at Patreon, we appreciate that. Patreon.com/geekoutloud. Hey, if you're an Android user, check out the Satchel Player. Go to satchelplayer.com. It's a new podcatcher that's in beta. It's going to be for Android and iOS devices, but they're really looking for people using the Android to help them do the beta for it. It's going to be a great new podcatcher that you can listen to and support your favorite podcast through. So check that out as well. Looking forward to more and more Disney talk as the weeks progress, especially as we get into this Renaissance period. But until then, it's about to get totally cray cray.
Totes.
So, but until next time, I'm Steve.
I'm Teresa.
What were you about to say, Teresa?
I was going to say I'm Teresa.
I think I go first.
I don't remember.
Well, I'm Steve.
And I'm Teresa. May all your days be magical.
And may you have some street sapwa fare.